Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, June 22nd, 2017. With me today, I have Kelly Goumont. How are you, Kelly?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing great. And John Martellaro, how are you?
I'm doing well. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, John.
It's so great to have both of you on. And I know I say that every single time you're on, but it's true. It's great to have both of you on. Yeah.
All right. What do we have to talk about, Jeff?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think we're going to start with Apple Music. And specifically, how much Apple pays the recording studios, there we go, for the subscription percentage that Apple pays to recording studios. The record labels.
So labels, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what Apple wants to do is renegotiate that so it's lower than it currently is. Currently, they're paying 58% of the subscription revenue that they collect mm-hmm. back to the record labels.
Okay.
They want to negotiate that down lower. And the reason that they want to negotiate that down lower is because Spotify just did. So Apple pays 58% currently. Spotify was paying 55% and is now paying 52%.
Okay.
And so Apple wants to be more in line with that market payment.
Okay.
And okay, so here's the deal. When I look at this, I'm thinking, okay, so there's this whole thing about what is the current market value and what is everyone paying? And as a corporation, Apple doesn't want to be overpaying, mm-hmm. but
Yes, they do.
You think they want to be overpaying?
Yeah.
Tell me why, John.
Well, because they're in deep competition against Spotify, and the labels would rather do business with a company that's going to pay them more. Apple doesn't need the revenue, but they do need the loyalty of the labels.
But here's the thing, though, is like, I guess I don't get why. I mean, I get why Apple doesn't want to be paying ridiculously more. Like if everyone else was paying 30%
right.
and Apple's paying almost 60, I could see where maybe Apple would be like, yeah, that
exactly.
shouldn't be a thing.
But
however,
this is just a few percent.
Right. First of all, we know Apple can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, if Apple Music is going to make the labels the most money, isn't that where Taylor Swift and Kanye West and Drake and Adele and Katy Perry, like if they're going to, I'm just rattling names off the top of my head of people I know do very well in streaming services. If those people, like, why wouldn't it behoove them to like give Apple an exclusive or do the what used to be the Redbox deal where like Redbox got movies on DVDs like a month before they showed up on streaming services and stuff because it gave Redbox an advantage.
You see my point exactly.
Like why wouldn't Apple want to stay at 58 because the difference between 58% and 52%, I know maybe it's a large amount of money, but when you're talking about 6%, like 6% is not hugely dramatic. So I would think Apple would still want to be paying more so that when Katy Perry has a new album out, you know, they can, you know, they're going to go, well, of course we're going to give it to Apple exclusively because Apple's going to make us the most money. And I get that, like I've always sort of thought that the label situation, the label relationship with streaming services was always sort of begrudging. It's it reminds me of in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, how Bill's dad's wife keeps insisting that he call her mom, even though she's just the stepmom. And I feel like that's the same sort of thing. It's a very begrudging relationship. Like, I don't want to do this, but we both know we have to. So I'm just going to hold my nose and try and do my best to work with you on this. So I feel like if Apple, as far as the labels are concerned, is the good guy here, then why wouldn't they just continue that behavior?
That's what Apple does. That's what every company does. That's the intermediary. We're going to make you money. You don't come to the table and sit down and negotiate and say, we're going to steal your money and make your life miserable. That's not a good business tactic. What you do is just sit down at the table and say, hey, don't go to the other guy. We're going to make you more money.
Right.
Well, okay. But if they've already got all the deals in place, and they have these good relationships with the record labels, mm-hmm. and the record labels are fine with taking a lower cut.
No, they're never. Are you kidding me?
Then why did they agree to do that with Spotify?
This is the thing that I'm wondering. Spotify tried to renegotiate. Why wasn't the label stance just it's good to want things? There's the door.
All right. So I have a hypothesis.
Yes.
I think the reason the record labels were willing to take less money is because they think the money that Spotify is going to be keeping can be used to expand Spotify's services, which translates to more subscribers, which ultimately means more money for the record labels, even though they're taking a smaller cut.
That's a lot of faith. A lot of faith that you're going to give money to somebody else and they're going to do the right thing with it to help make you rich when you give them money. That's a lot of trust. I'm dubious of that. I'm not label expert, but that doesn't sound right to me.
Well, like what I remember of making deals is I have something you want and you have something I want. So let's trade those things. Right now, if what I want is your car and what you want is my keyboard, then like that's not necessarily a fair thing. Like there's not a lot of leverage there. Like, you know, come on. So I feel like there's a third piece of this. I say this a lot when we talk about news from Apple, but I feel like there's a piece of this that we don't know.
Yeah.
That we aren't seeing in some way because it's not public or because nobody wants to report on it because they don't think it's very interesting. But I feel like we're not getting the whole picture on this because I don't get why anybody would walk into why a company would go to another company with whom they have a deal and go, yeah, we want to make it so we don't give you as much money for that and have the other company go, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Like there's more to this story and I feel like we just haven't heard it all yet.
Well, maybe they were willing to negotiate down because they knew they were making it up with Apple. And now Apple wants to make life difficult for them, too. Down.
Yeah. And okay. And if that's the case, as Apple, I would be like, oh, no, 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 no. We are not supplementing Spotify.
True. But here's the thing that sort of that I feel like is getting lost in all of this discussion mm-hmm. is that remember that, you know, all those artists that I named earlier, like Katy Perry isn't making money off of streaming. Like that's basically not a thing. Now her record label mm-hmm. probably is, but Katy Perry herself is not. If you have bought every Katy Perry single and you've bought every Katy Perry record and you saw her on the street and you walked up to her and you handed her $5, she just made more money off of you in that $5 than she did from you buying every single one of those records.
And certainly more money than she's made from you streaming her songs through any streaming music service.
Absolutely. No matter how much you listen, no matter how much you love them, like that's still not. Yeah. So I feel like part of what's getting lost here is the thing that I always thought was sort of confusing about streaming services anyway and why people wanted to be on them was artists specifically wanted to be on them because they don't really get much out of that. Like what actually goes to an artist for this stuff is almost a rounding error. Like unless they're being streamed on some sort of like intergalactic scale.
Right. And okay. So my take is that what artists are really making from streaming music services is visibility.
Yeah.
Basically. Streaming music services are akin to a commercial mm-hmm. for artists. And where they're making money now is touring.
Yeah. And sometimes in record sales. So if you really like that song and you want to hear it all the time and you go buy that song on iTunes or you go buy that album on iTunes, that's where like the magic is happening. But otherwise, yeah, it's concert tickets and it's when you buy a t-shirt at the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, all right. Well, what I've come to know, here's my conclusion on where we are today or right now with this, which is that we don't get exactly why the record labels are are willing to renegotiate down. But the best hypothesis we have is the one I just came up with, which is that they're going to make it up in volume. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, my guess is that in the end, the record labels are not going to hurt from this, and it's not going to help the artists.
Basically, right.
Yeah.
That's my assessment as well. I don't think this is going to change much for the people who are paying. Like, Apple's not going to ratchet up subscription prices to make up the difference. So as a listener of Apple Music, like, nothing's going to change for you. And if you are the person who is releasing music that is getting streamed on Apple Music or Spotify, like, this basically doesn't change anything for you either, because it's not like you were getting all that paid in the first place.
There you go. All right. Well, hey, then let's talk about something that I'm sure is a much happier topic, and that's MacBooks in the education market, because that's a place where Apple's just rocking the world, right, John?
Yeah, this is a subject dear to my heart, especially because my wife is a professor, and she sees every day what's going on with students, talking to students, their mentality, what kind of computers they bring to class, what their economic profile is, what their ability is in terms of, you know, being able to run certain programming software on their different computers. So a while back, I started thinking about whether it's a good thing for Apple to have all its eggs in the one iPad basket. Mm-hmm. And pitch the iPad as the, you know, when the iPad first came out, it looked like it was the future. 2010 and 11, everybody said, oh yeah, the PCs are going to die. We're going to watch the iPad sales increase and the PC sales decline. It hasn't happened. There's been a resurgence in Macs and a resurgence in PCs. Even though the sales are declining, people are clinging onto them, and they're not going away as fast as people had thought. And that's because of the slow technical evolution of the iPad. Mm-hmm. So Apple goes into schools trying to pitch an iPad against inexpensive Chromebooks, and the students and the schools are being cost conscious, are using a computer that they aspire to as they grow older anyway. I mean, iOS 11 is going to put iPad back on the map, but and there are a lot of stories about people who use iPads for good productive use. But I don't think many students think about the idea of, you know, taking a MacBook, taking an iPad Pro to college, because there's so many things they're not going to be able to do with it in terms of programming and other tasks and writing extensive documents and papers and doing reference work and scientific work and research. So Apple's got this inexpensive $329 iPad, maybe $275 in education prices, and they're still getting killed by Chromebooks and expensive PC notebooks. So wouldn't it be cool if Apple took a bold move and said, well, we're not going to just think about iPads. We're going to go toe-to-toe with these Chromebooks. And I don't mean cheapening the machine. I just mean re-engineering it. I mean, maybe coming up with a MacBook Air 2. A MacBook Air never had a hard disk. Maybe a MacBook Air 2 with a different motherboard could have, you know, 4 gigabytes of RAM, a 512 gig drive, and sell for $299. And Apple would flesh out its arsenal. You'd still have the quality. You'd still be running macOS Sierra and High Sierra. You'd have an entry into Apple's ecosystem. You'd have iTunes. You'd have a machine that that young students could carry forward in time until they were ready for a more grown-up notebook computer in high school and college. So I proposed yesterday in an article that it would be kind of a bold move for Apple not to put all its eggs in the iPad basket in education.
Okay, I have to giggle because if I recall correctly, and, you know, it's been a long time, I'm an old lady, and, like, this is kind of hazy to me now, but wasn't Apple in education in the first place so that when people left school, they would go buy a Mac? Like, isn't that a thing?
Oh, yeah, it's the childhood thing. It's the Apple II memory. I mentioned in the article that maybe 3/4 of my guests on Background Mode talk about their childhood growing up with an Apple II, and it changed and set the path for their entire career growing up with an Apple II. But
I'm one of those people.
Growing up with an iPad doesn't necessarily prepare you for an adult future with scientific computing and education and history and teaching and business.
I think your sentence in that assessment is missing a qualifier of yet, because maybe you can do a certain amount of scientific computing now that iOS 11 allows you access to a file system.
It's a good beginning. I'm happy.
Yeah. So now that some of this stuff has evolved, and now that there's some real horsepower under the hood of the newest generation of iPad Pros, maybe it's possible that between that and iOS 11, people who have held off on more scientific apps or more, high powered apps have that power now and have a visibility to the file system that's going to allow them to do that.
I think it's a good direction, but I don't think it solves the problem completely, because there's some lag in that effect. Not everybody's going to be able to go out and buy a brand new iPad running iOS 11.
But there's a certain amount of evolution that we have to worry about. I mean, John, when you open up a word processor and you go to save and you click on the button for save, it's a floppy disk today in 2017. Let's talk for a minute about evolution in computing. Like, I'm still waiting for computers to get to the point where, you know, I keep calling it the microwaving of technology. Like,
I'll give you a perfect counter example. My wife had a student who came into class and he was starting to try to write some code in Python. And he said, how do I save this? He didn't know how to save a file because he grew up with his phone and he didn't understand the concept of a file, putting it somewhere and naming it. Mm-hmm. He was helpless.
Right. But what you're telling me is that that kid is exactly the example for why we don't necessarily need a computer, because this kid grew up with cloud computing and didn't need to worry about hitting save, because when you put stuff in Dropbox, it doesn't save.
Forget that we all grew up with computers. You know, we grew up with Apple IIs. You started with Apple IIs. I did. We learned the fundamentals. We wrote basic code. We understood what storage was.
Right.
We
understood memory. Because my starting point was the Wild West of computing, you know, in the olden days.
Because we understand the infrastructure, we believe we were born knowing these things, and we do, but people...
No, I wasn't born knowing these things. I'm talking about having a very different starting point. I had to take a test in order to get a little laminated license to get to go to the library and sit down in front of that computer. And what did you have to do when you sat down at the computer? You had to touch the side of the metal library chair to discharge any static before you picked up a 5 1/4 inch floppy so you didn't erase it when you went to put it in the computer so you could play Oregon Trail.
Oh, good times.
Experiences in our life inform us about how to deal with a modern system.
Let's talk about starting
an iPhone, and they have no idea what secure enclave is or encryption or how their iPhone works or what solid state circuits are. No idea. It's just magic. But it's indistinguishable from magic.
State of a modern operating system.
Yeah, but you don't get through school skating. You don't get to spend your young years with an iPhone and then go into a Python or a Java programming class and ace the class.
But what I'm talking about is
you don't understand any principles at all about programming.
I'm just talking about basic technological interaction. When you grow up with a phone that is always connected, then or say an iPad that's always connected, then you always have a cloud service. So when you edit a file in Dropbox, it automatically gets saved to Dropbox. You don't ever have to hit save because Dropbox is taking care of that for you. So that's what I'm talking about, is just having a starting point of you didn't have to do all of that.
We all use those services as a convenience, knowing what the problem is and problems that can happen underneath, so that when the internet connection goes down, your router isn't working anymore, you don't have access to Dropbox, you know what to do instead of throwing up your hands and saying...
But that's the thing with Dropbox. It doesn't matter because your files are all saved locally and then synchronized when you have a connection. So the idea is you don't ever have to think about where did my files go.
I was trying to make a thought point.
Right, but John, honey, go get the bell because you need to ring it because you're wrong. Because the starting point here is what I'm talking about. And people who start now fundamentally have more technology available to them. And some of that can be obscured because just like in the olden days.
Understanding of what's going on in their system, which is why when you grow up with an iPad, you become completely incapable of going to the next level and understanding what the demands on you are on you in college.
John, I think we're in a transition phase right now, and I don't know how long it's going to be. And the transition phase that we're experiencing is, how do people interact with the files they're making? How do they save those? How do they store those? And in this transition phase, we're dealing with the old school, which is what we grew up with. You need to understand the file structure, the file system. You need to like physically move disks around so you know exactly where your files are. And what we're heading towards is a different system where it doesn't fall on the user to know where those files are and how they're stored.
I disagree completely. We had 7 years of the iPad where the file system was submerged, and Apple woke up one day and said, what's wrong with the iPad? Why are our sales declining for the last 4 years? What do we need to do to put the iPad on the map in terms of replacing the Mac and moving forward in history and fixing the problems and improving sales? Well, we need to do what we were doing before, give it a file system visibility.
And no. I think that's a stopgap measure. I think Apple realized they moved too quickly into this new system.
Because who crabbed about not having a file system? It wasn't the kids in your wife's college classes, John. It was the people, it was us going, there's no file system, Nick. You know, old man yells at cloud. That's where we are. And that's the issue, is people are very entrenched in their ways, just like the floppy disk icon I told you about a minute ago. Like, it's still an icon in a program in 2017. That's a thing. We need to, like, the evolution of this is going to be hard and it's going to suck, but, you know, let's look at cars. Like, in the old days, you had to be able to do basic maintenance on your car, which that level of basic maintenance is way higher than, like, my technical competency. That doesn't mean I can't operate a car. That doesn't mean I can't explain to you how it works, you know, but I'm still, you know, I'm still able to operate it, even though I don't know how all of that stuff happens.
We don't go to school to buy a car, but we do go to school to become a Honda repair tech. And a Honda repair tech has to learn an awful lot about what's going on. And if all he ever did was turn the key and drive to the supermarket, he would never be prepared to have a gainful employment as a Honda repair tech.
Right, but that's why he goes to school.
But that's what sells Hondas. It sells Hondas, but it doesn't prepare people for a technical life.
But this has nothing to do with a technical life. This has to do with, this is a tool I use to do a thing. And, you know, like, a lot of people probably have a car that they operate in order to get to a job that doesn't have anything to do with automobiles. Lots of people have those jobs. All three of us, for example, have jobs that have nothing to do with driving. So we've got some skills, we've got some basic knowledge about that car. But, you know, the inner workings of cars have been more obscured and more obscured over the course of my lifetime. And that's only going to continue as they go electric and stuff. And you can't just pop open the hood.
So you're an engineer doing solid state circuit design. You drive to work in your car, you turn the key, you get there, you walk into the office, and you do a complex silicon state circuit design on what? An iPad with a 9-inch screen?
No. Maybe. No, you do it on an iPad with a 12-inch screen.
No, you do it on a HP Z workstation with a terabyte of RAM and a 35-inch screen.
Today.
Yeah.
But later, maybe you have a thin client that connects to more horsepower in another room.
We have a long way to go.
I didn't say we didn't, but that doesn't mean it's not possible. I mean, remember there was a point, John, where if you looked someone in the eye and said, I can put more technology in your pocket than was used to send and retrieve people from the moon, people would have put you in the balloony bin. And that's not and now they would have branded you a witch and burned you at the stake. And today that is common.
Well, all that means is the gigabytes of data can be stolen from you faster than ever before.
Thank you, Ray of Sunshine.
I think Jeff wants to wrap
today.
Up here. Yeah.
What a wonderful place to wrap up on. All your data belong to us.
I think we could get there. I'm really excited now that Apple has put more air quote real tools.
I am too.
On the iPad. I'm excited to see
iOS 11 is going to be awesome.
I was excited about the iPad in the first place for the potential I saw in it with what other people could do. And now that there's visibility to the file system and a number of other things are resolved that people have complained about, I can't wait to see what everybody does with it now.
Yep. Yep. All right. And when we started with this topic, this is not where I expected us to end up. But hey, I am always along for the ride. So, Kelly, thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And John, thank you for being here as well.
You're very welcome. Bye, Kelly.
Bye, John.
Oh, and listeners, thank you for joining us yet again and holding on for that wild ride. Every one of you rocks. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.